one.
Good day, ladies and gents. My name's Darvell Stewart. I'm 33 years old, from Kansas City, Missouri. Well, actually, I live in Grain Valley now. It's a suburb of KC. Born and raised in the Kansas City area, lifelong KC native. And I am here with my one small step interview partner. Here's Jenny.
Nice start out. My name is Jenny Beausoleil. I am, 59 years old. Today's date is August 1st, 2023. I'm in Richmond, Virginia. I just moved here 5 years ago from Northern Virginia. I am with my one small step partner, Darvell.
Yay. All right.
So, Jenny's bio. I am a center of the road, fiscally conservative, independent, and have voted both sides of the ticket. I was a community activist for over 30 years and volunteered for several positions on the local level in local government. I am an atheist who was raised Episcopal and Catholic. I am a garden variety athlete and have lived in both suburban and urban environments. I feel most comfortable out in nature. I worked my way through school. I am a live and let live person and believe knowledge is power. Darvell's bio.
Amen.
I am a lifetime Kansas City resident and have been blind since birth. I grew up around heavy drug and alcohol abuse from my dad, who I no longer have contact with. Lots of mental health struggles from those experiences, as well as others since, and I tend to get along better with women. I'm a Christian and love time with family, with friends and family, movies, TV, music, and overall enjoying life. I believe we should all help each other out whenever and however possible, but it should be hands up, not hands out. So I am now typing the first question in the chat.
Okay. And let the conversation commence. Are you still typing, John?
Nope. The question is in the chat.
Okay. Let me see if I can find it.
Why did we want to participate in a one small step conversation today?
There we go. Okay. All right. Well, Jenny. So why did you want to participate in the one small step conversation today? What made you want to do it?
I saw the 60 Minutes story. And I also, online, I had seen things. It might have been through Facebook. It might have been through some other things. I got curious and just researching about One Small Step, the StoryCorps. And I love the idea of talking to people that are not just like me. I grew up in a very eclectic household, and my parents had friends. I grew up in the 60s and early 70s, and my parents had friends from all walks of life, and had a lot of experiences themselves, and I really, especially in this what I feel like is a really polarized time, I just want to reach out and connect with other people who aren't like me.
Yeah. Yeah. And same here. I mean, we were saying off air that, well, all three of us, it turns out we were saying off air that it was the 60 Minutes piece that sparked our collective interest in it. I'm kind of the same way, you know. I won't lie, I've contributed to the polarization in this country. I think we all have. If we're being honest with ourselves, we all have to some degree. But, you know, it's just so, I agree with you, you know, it's just so depressing how horribly divided and polarized we are now. And I hope to help do my part to build a bridge instead of a barrier.
Oh, I love how you put that.
Yeah, build bridges, not barriers. And I grew up, as my bio says, I grew up around things that no child should, that no one should grow up around. Drugs, alcohol abuse, led to other kinds of abuse, physical, mental, emotional, verbal. And you'd think with me considering myself a Christian, you'd think that I would probably reject that, because I mean, the argument could be made, well, if God's so loving and merciful and all that, then where was he when, but some people might say, well, where was he when your dad was getting drunk and whacked out of his skull on alcohol and crack every night? Where was he when your dad was scaring you by stumbling all over the house with the lights off, or when he was, when his already volatile temper was only exacerbated by the drugs and the alcohol? Where was God then? You know, where was, and believe me, I ask myself that sometimes, even to this day. But I think what helped me was that my mom, she made sure that myself and my two younger brothers were involved in church, in the church that she grew up in. I was raised Community of Christ, used to be known as RLDS. I've stuck with it. My brother's not so much, but that's okay. I've stuck with it because, and I actually found my safe haven in church camps in church camps with COC that I started going to when I was about 12 years old, I think, in summer of 2002. That was the first year I went to one of my local delegations church camps, and through the rest of my middle school years and my high school years, I found that safe haven in those events, the church camps, the youth rallies, the national church camps that all the delegations of COC from around the country participated in. I know I'm going way, way, way off topic here, but hey, we're talking about what's shaped us, right?
Yes.
The national one that I attended, the summers after my sophomore, junior, and senior years of college, that was probably my favorite one. It was called Sports Spectacular, it's more commonly known as SPEC. And it takes place up at Graceland University up in Iowa. And Graceland is sponsored by Community of Christ. They're not necessarily a Community of Christ college. They're just sponsored by them. But anyway, going to SPEC, that was the first time I ever had an opportunity to play any kind of sports. And I discovered that I loved softball and running track and stuff. That was where I discovered my love for those things.
That's fabulous.
But all those things, the church camps, the local ones that I went to here in Missouri, the going to the local like youth rallies and stuff, going to spec, all that stuff. I honestly feel that, I mean, had I not found that safe haven, I don't think I would have made it. I don't think I would have lived through my teen years.
I understand.
I genuinely don't think I would have lived through my teen years.
Well, I'll just say that when I read your bio yesterday, I marvel at how you put it all out there, and we share a lot of experience from growing up. My father was an alcoholic and a compulsive gambler, and also physically abusive to my mother. And so I tried to be out of the house as much as possible, but it was just a really rough time, and I think I really compartmentalized that part of my life and try and kind of put, I guess, a different face on things and don't talk about my upbringing that much. But the mental health issues that my father also brought to what was going on. And then I wound up later in life working for National Alliance on Mental Illness in their national office. So I kind of came full circle and learned so much when I was working there. But
oh man, sorry.
Are you okay?
My left leg was starting to cramp a little bit, so I needed to stand up and stretch it. Okay, better now.
Good.
Sorry about that. Go ahead.
You
were talking about Mental Health Alliance and you've worked for them, and it made everything come full circle for you.
It helped me really understand a lot of things better for what I experienced, and then my own Asperger's, and so it really helped in a lot of ways, and I made lifelong friends, the people that I worked with there, so that was a really great thing. But I mean, if those camps that you went to just sound like they were amazing and gave you such such a different perspective, I guess. Were they an escape for you? I mean, were you really looking forward to being able to get away to camp?
Those were the only things I looked forward to every summer after I started going to them. That was what I had to look forward to every summer. And during the year, I would just, during the school year, you know, I would just be counting down the days to the next ones, to, you know, to the next summer and stuff. And actually, that was where I first opened up about, you know, what was going on at home. At church camp, my third year going, they always had at least one night at the campfire where, I mean, well, we had campfire every night, but they always had at least one night where campers would get up and they would share testimonies, you know, they would about, you know, whatever was on their mind, whatever was on their heart. Some of them could be quite emotional, but, my third time at church camp, summer of 04, after I finished my eighth grade year, that was when I first opened up and shared you know, a lot of what was going on. Actually, I laid it all out. What was going on at home? What the extent to which it was hurting me mentally, especially. I even shared that I was struggling with suicidal thoughts. That was the first time I had shared that. And I'm not going to lie, I'm usually very comfortable opening up to people, you know, and stuff like that. But I was terrified to do that first time, because I had thought, now, Mom and Kevin, that's my quote unquote dad's name, but I no longer speak to him. I want nothing to do with him. I mean, he has done nothing to earn the title of dad or father or anything like that. So lately, you know, I've just been calling him by his name. But Kevin especially used to tell us what I thought was, you know, don't tell anybody what's going on at home, or they'll think that me and your mom are bad parents. My mom told me in later years that what they were actually saying was, you know, don't talk about it at school. Mm-hmm. But I mean, younger me thought that it was don't talk about it at all. So I just kind of buried it until that night at church camp. John, can we pause for a moment? I have to use the restroom. I'm sorry.
No problem at all.
I'll be right back.
Okay.
Don't go anywhere.
Well. With someone else, I'm an active listener, and so I'm really paying attention and focusing on you and looking at you and listening to you and nodding my head. I'm nodding my head a lot. But I don't want to say anything or interrupt your flow of you saying something. And so just know that I am listening, and that it's not, you know, to total radio silence or anything like that.
All right. Okay. I gotcha. And I wasn't thinking that you were tuning me out, because I heard you kind of went, a few times when I've been talking. So I knew that you were there.
Okay.
You know, you weren't spacing out.
I'm not used to having, I have earbuds in right now, and I'm not used to that, because they, like, sensory wise, I don't like things like that. So this is kind of
earbuds.
Oh, so, and I don't have, I probably do someplace, but, so I'm just not used to having anything covering on my ears or in my ears. So it's kind of a weird thing, but so I'm trying not to interrupt your flow. That's all I'm trying to say.
Okay. Yeah. But hey, I know the feeling. I hate earbuds. Hence why I still prefer to wear headphones that go over your ears. I don't like having things like that in my ears. I do not like it at all. But yeah, what was I saying? Oh yeah, about church camp and how that was the first time I opened up about, you know, what was going. if you haven't unpaused it yet, John, you can.
Yep, we're back on.
Okay. What was going on at home and stuff, and I was terrified when I got up there and spoke, because I was still, you know, in the back of my mind, I could hear Kevin especially saying, don't tell anyone, don't tell anyone, don't tell anyone. And again, you know, I thought that he was saying, you know, don't talk about it at all. That's what I interpreted it as. But as I talked, as I shared, I got more comfortable with sharing, and I was probably up there. I don't even know how long I was up there talking, but when I was done, I went to sit back down with my friends, which was just about everybody at camp. and you know, just sat there, listened to other people's testimonies and stuff, and, you know, supported them. And afterwards, people started coming up to me and, you know, telling me how touching that testimony was, and how they, you know, the old cliche about, you know, how they never would have known any of that had I not shared it, because I was so, you know, energetic and happy and saying hi to everybody, greeting everybody, always trying to make them laugh and laughing with them and stuff like that. You know, there are times when I'm never sure what, I don't know whether that's meant to be a compliment or a backhanded insult. You know, I would have never known that you were struggling with this, that, or the other thing, because you seem so happy and cheerful. Is that supposed to be a compliment or an insult?
You know what? I think when you grow up with experiences like the ones that you've had, that I've had, I think you kind of compartmentalize things to a certain degree. And so your outward, you know, for the most part, you know, keeping a smile on your face and having energy is kind of your way to combat what you've dealt with, and kind of turn it back into something light, that light shines through you, and that enveloping of other people. You were saying that at camp that you made friends with everybody, and I can totally see that, you know. I think that's a really special quality to possess, being able to, you know, it sounds like really great difficulties that you have endured, and yet you've gone on to plant a garden and really bloom from that.
No, but it has. One thing I've learned, though, as I've gotten older, is that it becomes harder and harder to compartmentalize to compartmentalize your life, basically, because, I mean, sooner or later, it's going to catch up with you in some way. Stuff that you've buried, it doesn't stay buried forever. Stuff that you've blocked out, it doesn't stay blocked out forever. Sooner or later, it's going to hit you in a way that makes you realize, oh man, I never really dealt with this. And one of two things will happen. You'll either decide, okay, I need help. I need help. I need counseling or therapy or something, because I need to work. I need to address these things. I need to work through them so that I can come out of, I don't want to say a better person, but I can't think of another word for it or another phrase.
That's a great way to say it.
But yeah, I mean, I have depression, anxiety, and PTSD from all that stuff that went on when I was growing up, as well as other things that have happened since. I've battled that stuff, including suicidal thoughts, for more than half my life. But I only started getting help for it. I still remember the exact month and year too. I only started getting help for it back in May of 2019. So I've been getting help for it over the last 4 years. And even then, I mean, there are still struggles, and there will always be, I think anyway, there will always be those mental health struggles, because depression and stuff like that, it doesn't just, it's not something that goes away.
It's living, you know, with it.
Yes, yes. Like it's always there. It's always lurking in the background, waiting for an opportunity to come to the front to the forefront and say, "I'm still here. You'll never get rid of me."
It's true.
Okay, that was a bit of a cartoonish voice, but oh well.
No, I totally get it, and that was a really great way to put it. It's always there. You are living with, and that's what I learned when I worked at NAMI. You know, you're not suffering. You're not. It's, you are living with depression. You're living with mental illness, and mental illness is an illness like any other. And you know, that's it's a lifelong. It's like an appendage. I mean, that's with you, and sometimes it's bigger, and sometimes it's smaller. It's like an extra finger or something, but. You know, it's just living with it.
Yeah. And you were saying earlier that you've kind of compartmentalized it all, or was that something you did early on to try to block it out, or is it something you still do?
So good question. I can, when things got really bad, was when I was in high school. I have a younger brother and older sister. And when things got really, really bad, and I was in high school, there's actually a picture that is in my high school yearbook, and I hated high school. And my parents tried to put me, they thought that it was all me. And they didn't think that what was going on with them had anything to do with what was going on with me, and I was just all over the place. And so they chucked me into a Catholic high school for the last 2 years of high school. And I had the distinction of my award at the end of the year was that I was out of uniform for the most detentions, because I was out of uniform all the time. But there's one picture that was in the yearbook of me, and it was after the night that my father, he picked me up from work. I worked at a retail store when I was in high school, and he came and picked me up, and I didn't realize that he was drunk, and he almost killed both of us. And it was intentional. And then he dropped me off at, I almost jumped out of the car.
Why didn't you?
You know, we were going through a section of Rock Creek Park. And there were trees, and I was really afraid of just crunching into it. We were going very fast. So he did wind up dropping me off at the house, and I was just completely shocked. And then it really devolved from there. The next day at school, and I went to school the next day, and I was falling asleep like in a chair, and somebody took a picture of me. And so I have that record now of me on that particular day when it was so bad. So I think for me, it was, you know, I channeled it into, I'm just going to be really mature. And it was, the whole thing was not to tell, you know, it's like, we should call the police. And my, you know, my sister, my older sister and my mother, now we can't call the police. So it was really compartmentalizing, you know, of, okay, then I have to figure out how I'm going to keep going.
Yeah.
And just kind of putting it away. So, so that's, that's pretty much how, until I started, you know, figuring out, boy, how I grew up was really not a great way to grow up. you know, I've been fortunate, you know, it took me a long time to figure things out, to kind of be in a good place. But, and what helped me with that was, you know, I'm looking at question two now. And Darvell, I'm going to ask you this question.
All right.
How would you describe your upbringing? Okay, we're talking about that now. And how has your upbringing shaped the way you identify politically?
Interesting. I would describe it as, well, it was certainly less than ideal. Certainly, like, not the kind of, because even when Mom and Kevin were married, they divorced, they separated multiple times, but they separated for the final time in 2005 and got divorced in 2006. They were married in 98 when I was 8 years old. Anyway, even when Mom and Kevin were together, Kevin wasn't there. You know, he was much more interested in how and where he could get his next alcohol fix, his next crack cocaine fix, stuff like that, which left Mom to do what she thought she needed to do to take on both parenting roles to myself and both of my younger brothers. And as such, it says in my bio, I put that I get along better, that I get along better with women than I do men. This is precisely why. Because the one man, quote unquote, in my life who was supposed to be there wasn't. And as such, I don't really trust a lot of men. How has that shaped me politically? Well, I have liberal leanings and conservative leanings. Conservatively, I mean, I know Kevin didn't work a lot because he wanted to live off the government and stuff like that, wanted to use government money or money that he got from settlements and stuff like that to buy drugs and stuff. Mm-hmm. And when he was working, he wouldn't report his income,
right?
Which screwed me over because SSI benefits were being drawn for me, you know, because yes. of my being born blind. So he was abusing the system, in short. And you could say this is where the whole hand ups, not handouts thing comes from. Mm-hmm. With me. And that does tend to be more of a conservative lean, is that, you know, yes, absolutely, we should help each other. We should help each other. We should help each other when we're in need, even when we're not in need, but, you know, just need a hand up. But right. I mean, but I firmly believe that there's a difference between a hand up and a hand out. You know, hand up, it gives you, it's like help you get back on your feet, but you have to make that choice to get back on your feet. A hand out is where you're perfectly capable of doing whatever, but you just figure, okay, I know that language isn't really allowed in these, but I assume that you're an adult who can handle it. Yes. So, but yeah, you're like, oh, fuck it. I'll just sit on my ass and collect handouts. Not even try to work, not even yes. try to do my part. No, that's why. So yeah, again, hand up, not hand out.
I'm sorry. I just want to tell you that Jonathan stepped out. I just wanted to let you know that.
He stepped out.
Sorry. Yes, and he must be doing something right. He wrote in the chat, and he wanted to let me. He wanted me to tell you, but I think that you get that message, though, don't you?
Yeah. Hold on. Let me see. I will be right back. Please tell Darvell.
Yes.
I've been told, right, Jen.
And I totally get what you're saying. It's helping, not enabling.
Right. And sadly, whether people realize it or not, I think we've become a culture of enabling. In all sorts of things, and not just laziness, not just enabling laziness, but enabling in all sorts of things. Like people want to, you know, they want the politically correct thing to do nowadays, it seems, is to enable people's bad behaviors instead of bad habits or whatever, and instead of saying, wait, no, that's not right, that's not healthy. But of course, then the question comes, who gets to decide what's healthy and what isn't? That's a whole other kettle of fish.
Well, but it's also, you know, it's an engagement thing. I think that so many people have been given a pass on engagement, and I'll give you an example. So I've got two kids that are now adults.
They're about my age.
They're 25 and 29, I think.
Yep, close.
25, 26. And I also work in higher education. And so what I really have seen over the course of working in higher education and then with my own kids, the helicopter parenting thing and the, you know, the hovering and the do it for whomever kind of, there is, and I see it with social engagement now, just even out on the street, people and cell phones and just how they're just so ultra focused on, you know, themselves and taking pictures of themselves or texting or being on the phone instead of, you know, you're walking around, you know, I live in a city. So, and just engaging with other people. I think that that's part of a free pass too, that without engaging and then people in the political, I think that it was a lack of engagement, feeling like their vote didn't count, that their say didn't count, what they thought didn't count. And so they just kind of, you know, it's already decided kind of thing. And then we wound up where we are. So.
Yeah, and that can be chalked up to both sides, honestly.
Yes.
Because there are people on both sides. I mean, 2016, it was people on the left who thought that their votes didn't count, so they yes. stayed home. And 2020, it was people on the right in 2020, they showed up to vote, yeah. But they, for whatever twisted, warped reason, decided to storm the U.S. Capitol in 2021 because they didn't get their way. And in my mind, you know, there are a lot of political enablers.
Right.
We have about 10 minutes left.
Yeah.
Only 10 minutes left already. I'm having fun here.
So, you know, I'll just say that my mom really shaped me politically. She was the kind of person who, so she grew up in the Depression. She was the oldest of six kids, and she was working by the time she was 11 in a market in in upstate New York. And she was the only Democrat in her family. So, oh yeah, and to this day. So, she really, you know, I grew up with my mom reading the Washington Post spread out on the kitchen table, you know, every day before she went to work. And, you know, by the time we came down, you know, waking up in the morning, she was ready, you know, a couple cups of coffee and just talking about, you know, world events right away. So just really.
Yeah.
So yeah. Crazy stuff. But she was very active as in her voting precinct. And she also had some, you know, some very small fundraisers at her house with local politicians. And this was in Maryland. And so, you know, I lean Democrat. I like to say I'm independent, but I lean Democratic. But I think I'm more of a conservative Democrat because I really do feel like people need to, you know, there's got to be some skin in the game as far as, you know, Darvell, what you were saying about Kevin, that, you know, people that, helping people is one thing, enabling people is just something else entirely. So,
yes.
So I really have taken that with me, you know, I care really deeply about the issues in our country at this point. And I really hope that the people who have been adversely affected, especially in the last 10 years, you know, I won't just say the last 4 or 5 or 6, but, you know, a good 10 years that those people really find their voice and decide that they want to play. So,
right.
So then, and I'm just looking at the, or because there's a part two and we've only got 10 minutes left. All right. And you and your family. Okay. Darvell.
Yeah.
So how did you and your family end up in the city you're currently in? When did your ancestors arrive in America? And lastly, do you consider yourself to be proud to be American?
Well, I really don't know how either side of my family, my mom's side or my Kevin's side, even now, sometimes I still have to remember. It's a tough cycle. It's a tough thing to break out of. You know, sometimes I still have to remind myself, hey, you're not speaking to him. You have no involvement with him. He doesn't deserve the title dad. So don't say my dad, just say Kevin. Anyway, I really don't know how either side of my family ended up here. But what was that other part?
So ending up in the city you're currently in?
Oh, okay. Well, right now, my family and I, we just moved to my mom, my youngest brother, my sister-in-law, and my two nephews. We just moved to Grain Valley, Missouri, which is a suburb of Kansas, another suburb of Kansas City. Spent most of my life in either Independence or Blue Springs, another couple of Kansas City suburbs on the Missouri side. Where we are now, like right now, as of a couple weekends ago, we were just ready to get out of Independence and we were ready to get out of our living situations that we were in at that time. So we just moved, and we saw a house out here that was for rent that we really liked, and, you know, applied for it. And as you can see, got approved for it. Well, I mean, you can only see part of the house, part of the house, but yeah. Am I proud to be an American? Sometimes yes, and sometimes no, if I'm being honest.
Depends on the day.
Yep. Yeah, pretty much. It depends on the day. And unfortunately right now, there are more no days than yes days because of how fraught with tension we all are, you know, just how divided we all are. I mean, even amongst Democrats and Republicans, there's division, because you have the extremes, mm-hmm. which statistically most people are not. You have the extreme factions of both sides fighting with the, I'll say, reasonable factions of both sides. Mm-hmm. Like, you have the left-wing crazies fighting with the moderate / conservative-leaning Democrats, you know, who are more reasonable, more open to discussing ideas and stuff. And you have the extreme conservatives who think people like Donald Trump are the second coming of Jesus and his disciples,
yes.
fighting with the more reasonable conservative side. It's just, I'm going to say it like this. It's a fucking mess.
It's a circus.
Yeah. Except it's a circus that none of us wanted tickets to. That is not the greatest show on earth. Mm-hmm. And there is, and where's my cotton candy and popcorn, damn it? Where's my cotton candy and popcorn?
Nicely said.
Yeah, it's not, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, children of all ages, it's the politics circus.
Yeah, it's. So I'll answer, let's see. So we are in Richmond, Virginia, and moved here with my husband, Rob. And both our kids went to VCU. We were
VCU.
In so Virginia Commonwealth University.
Okay.
And that's right in the city. So I actually grew, I was born in Petersburg, Virginia, which is probably about 25 miles southwest of here. And my parents were both upstate and western New York from there originally. And my dad came down to take a job. And then shortly after I was born, we moved up to Maryland. But Rob and I decided we were in Northern Virginia for 25, 30 years. And I don't know, it's just so crazy. Just the people up there are just so, it's just a crazy pace, and people are, you know, don't you know who I am kind of people. And it's just really not our speed. And so when our daughter was going to school here, you know, came down fairly often and just started looking around, and it just the pace, and also being in a city, it's just, we're both introverts, but really wanted to experience being in a city. And so, and I just said to my husband, you know, okay, this is one of those deals where you walk out the front door and we are swimming in the Gulf Stream. And there are people, we're right on a corner and there's a Starbucks and, you know, all that kind of junk, which I can't stand Starbucks, but that's okay. Anyway, so.
I've never heard of a white woman who doesn't like Starbucks.
Oh, God, I can't stand Starbucks. Charbix. Ew. And local. So I'm very into, you know, there are tons of local coffee shops and all that kind of stuff. And so I buy my own beans and grind them and make my own dang coffee and save money. Dang it. spending three bucks on a cup of coffee. So
four, five, or six.
Yes. Oh my God, so crazy. So yeah, I don't know. So we wound up here. Where did my ancestors come from? So I'm kind of a mutt. So my grandmother was Irish and my grandfather was Scottish. And so that's kind of the nutshell. And then they came here like actually pre-Mayflower. So they were like the ships that came over scouting stuff out. And then Jamestown, some came through Jamestown as well. I had the distinction of one of my ancestors was the first poet in Jamestown. And then, somebody came through and like Plymouth Rock, he's on Plymouth Rock or whatever. So, you know, I could belong to all those societies and everything, but you know, that's just not a me thing. I don't know. Some days are okay being an American, and some days I just want to hang my head. And same with you, Darvell. It's a day-to-day thing, and I am really disgusted by a lot of things politically at this point. Because
I would think most reasonable people would be. I'm sorry. I shouldn't have interrupted.
No, my goodness, no. And I'm glad that you are saying something. I just don't understand how we've lost track of not just helping each other, listening to each other, talking to each other, and also doing things for the country, just working on, you know, infrastructure and helping people to be able to afford being able to rent someplace, being able to buy, you know, someplace to live. We have lost track of, you know, there's the billionaire class and then there's the rest of everybody else. And there's this huge chasm in between. And, you know, that's not healthy. That's not sustainable. And something, you know, these billionaires who are spending zillions of dollars going into space, you know, what is that? You know, why aren't we trying to solve world hunger, climate change?
You know what I think it is? I think they're trying. I think they're spending all this money going into space so that they can try to colonize space. If our planet ever burns up or whatever, and we get wiped out, they'll have their precious emergency escape route.
True.
Be affected. Yeah. And stupid shit like that. I think that's a lot of what it is. And I don't want you to get it twisted. I'm definitely not a hardcore conservative, but I don't consider myself a hardcore Democrat either. Like you, I consider myself moderate, although I do lean more left than right. But I am beyond tired of the extremes on both sides getting all the attention, all the notice, all the coverage, all the amplifying, when statistically speaking, most people are not either of those.
Yes. Yes. Totally agree. Totally agree. All right, we have
Fox News and MSNBC alike. There we go. I'm putting the blame on both of them.
Okay. We have two last questions. All right. What has been bringing you joy lately? And what would you most likely remember about today's conversation?
What has been bringing me joy lately? Things like spending time with my two little nephews who are of course living with myself, my mom, my youngest brother, and my sister-in-law. I mean, they kind of have to be living with us because they're 6 years old and 2 years old.
Oh.
getting to spend time with them. I mean, I have lots of nieces and nephews, but they're the two that I'm that I'm closest to. I mean, and even before we moved, even before we all moved into this house together, we spent a lot of time over at each other's separate houses and stuff. So, yeah, but getting to spend time with them and, you know, watching them grow and stuff, and the fact that I let me back up, and I told you before that you know, I struggled with depression and all that stuff. Back in October of 2020, I actually tried to end it. I actually tried to end my life because that's how bad it had gotten I couldn't fight off those thoughts anymore. But obviously I was unsuccessful, and I'm glad I was, because, you know, my older of the two youngest nephews, he was 3 years old at the time, and only a couple days after I tried to do that, I was playing with him when he was over at mine and mom's apartment, and just the way he was laughing and enjoying the time with his Uncle Darvell,
mm-hmm.
it made me think, you know, I seriously almost cried while I was playing with him, because I was like, how could I leave him? How could I leave him? And it continues to be the case that a lot of times Braxton, the one who's now six, and Ezrin, the one who's now two, a lot of times they're a lot of what keeps me trying, mm-hmm. because I love being around them and playing with them and entertaining them and stuff so much. But yeah, that's really a lot of what's bringing me joy here lately, as is, you know, other things that I can't think of off the top of my head right now. And what was the second part? What did you get from this conversation?
Mm-hmm.
Well, Well, I got that we were more, you know, it's really cliche, but I got that we were more alike than not. And tell you the truth, I really didn't get a particular vibe from your bio one way or the other when I read it yesterday, because I was like, I mean, it wasn't like, oh, it wasn't like I thought, oh man, this is a hardcore conservative, or this is a hardcore liberal, or anything like that. I mean, even reading your bio, I got an idea that we were probably more alike than not. Only differences would be that I still consider myself a Christian, even though I have a lot of problems with a lot of what these extreme Christians, aka extreme conservatives, are doing. And, you know, I wonder where God is and all that stuff. But yeah, the fact that I still consider myself a Christian, despite what I went through growing up, and you being an atheist, I kind of thought that I was kind of afraid that there was going to be some level of tension there.
No way.
Some of the atheists I've talked to are almost as unreasonable as some extreme conservative Christians.
Trying to push an agenda, I think, is more the, you know what I mean?
Yes.
And that could be conservative people, that could be like super liberal people.
Oh yeah, absolutely. No denying that.
So, yeah. And I totally get what you're saying. From part of my background, so I'm more of a spiritist, and that is more in the animal world. Hawks and owls, I've had really interesting encounters with both of those birds. So I played soccer for a long time, and so I had an owl swoop over me during a nighttime soccer game, and one other person saw that, and so just swoop right over me. Wasn't trying to, you know, claw me or attack me or anything like that. Just swooped over me. And then hawks, I've just had really interesting, where they've kind of flown along as I've walked. I mean, like really low, not, you know, way up in the air kind of thing, but I've just had really interesting, or they'll show up at certain times that I would take as signs, I guess is the best way to say that. So
why those two species of birds specifically, do you think?
I don't know. I'm not really sure. I mean, I don't really know. I mean, I think that they're both really intelligent and quiet, and I mean, crows can gang up, they call it a murder of crows, and they can gang up and kill a hawk. So, you know, hawks, while they are predatory, they also can be killed. So, and then owls, owls to me are quiet and they're super stealth too. But they observe. Both of them are highly observant, and that's really me. I try and listen twice as much as I talk, because I want to learn things. So maybe that's it. So
you think those are your spirit animals?
Then? Yes.
Like you feel a sort of spiritual connection with them, and so in that sense, you said you're a. You consider yourself to be a spiritist. That's kind of what you meant?
Yes. Yeah, that's exactly what I meant.
That you feel a sort of, you feel a vibe or a connection with owls and hawks specifically because they, like you, are introverted and observant.
Yes. That puts it really well. And bees. I used to be a beekeeper, and I had I just had this really cool experience when I was a beekeeper. So
yeah.
I had disassembled a hive or putting it back or something. And right as I was trying to clean up the bee yard, I had a whole bunch of bees on the back of my veil, you know, wore a suit with a veil. And so
they were
probably about 10, 12 bees, and I wasn't paying attention because I was moving around so much. And then all of a sudden I kind of tuned into, okay, I hear something, but I'm not sure what it is. These 10 or 12 bees on the back of my veil were singing to me, each in a different key. It was the most incredible experience I've ever, and one by one, they left my veil. I'm not kidding. I'm not joking. I'm not making this up. And I told all my beekeeping friends this. And they were in a different key. So just slightly differently from each other. And they flew off my veil one at a time. So I really feel something with pollinators. There you go.
Yeah.
So I'm very out there. So
yeah, I'm scared of flying insects. Aww. If I recognize their various parts of nature and stuff, but I'm scared of them because I never know if it's a bee or a fly, and I don't like the buzzing sound. Mm-hmm. So anytime I hear it, I freak out because I don't know what it is. Mm-hmm. And I think a lot of that, more than anything, is to do with the fact that, you know, I can't see them. Mm-hmm. So if I all of a sudden hear a buzzing noise right by my ear, it's going to scare me.
Yes.
And see, that's the thing. Those bees, flies, whatever, they seem to have a... God damn it, not again.
Oh, cramping.
Yeah, I guess I'm not used to sitting in this particular chair. Mm-hmm. For some reason, these buzzing insects, they seem to have a liking for buzzing right by your ears. Mm-hmm. I've never understood why that is, but they seem to like doing that.
Yes.
And yeah, I never know if it's a bee or a fly. I'm not really focusing on if it's a bee or a fly. I'm focusing on getting the little critter away from me.
Mm-hmm.
I don't like it near me. But that's not to say that I don't recognize their place in nature, because I do. I just don't think if I was over at a beekeeper's house,
mm-hmm.
and I would be scared to go out into their bee yard with them.
Yeah, I mean, it is. It can be an overwhelming experience. I admit that. So I just want to say, because I think we're supposed to be wrapping up. Okay. So what brings me joy? So being out in nature really brings me joy. So there is a state park that we like to go to, and just that really forest bathing to me, where just walking through, and it can be just walking around here too, but that really brings me a lot of joy, and gardening. So we don't have very much gardening space here, but I'm out and I do lots of gardening. And then what I remember about the conversation today, I have had a great time talking to you. I really tried not to come in with any preconceived notions, Darvell, and I read your bio, and the first thing that jumped out to me was, you really put it all out there. And to me, that takes so much, that takes so much courage. It really does. Because, you know, and then I read over my bio and I thought, you know, I'm not really saying anything.
Don't think that, because I mean, you said a lot too, just in fewer words.
You know what? I really applaud that, and I draw from that experience of reading your bio and then meeting you via Zoom, but meeting you and I'm so glad that I took part in this, and that I met you and talked to you, and we have a lot more in common than than I would have thought. And I kind of wondered if I was going to be. So I really thought that I might get paired with somebody who was white, conservative, Christian, very conservative, and so that was my thought of that could happen. And, you know,
mine too.
Okay. Okay. So, and you know what? And I get along with people. There was someone in my last neighborhood who had a huge drill here, drill now, banner on his fence. And so, but I got to know him for him and not because of his politics, and he would have done anything for me, and I for him. So I just, you know, leaving that all behind, that we are human beings and hopefully sharing a little bit of purpose here.
Yeah. And-